Valley with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. One more show before we have our little break, but the enthusiasm's still there. And the reason why the enthusiasm's still there is because we've got people like the famous Jack Bennion on my left. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
The man who had more TV coverage than me on the Manx Rally, but I'm not jealous in any way, shape or form. Hey, I was only a BRC champion, or what was it, BBC 4 champion, wasn't it? There you go, that's what it was. And on my right, I always have Ryan Champion. Hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello, Tony Simpson and Jack Bennion.
There you go. Do you know what? This week, it's kind of weird. And the reason why it's weird is because this week, there's a big feature on the superstar Jack Bennion making his rally debut as a driver, which we're going to talk about, because that's part of MN. And then obviously, we've got Ryback in a World Rally car. And I'm doing nothing. Absolutely not. I'll be painting my fence this week. That's what I'll be doing. So that's about as close as I'll get to rallying this week. But still, there you go. So yeah, there you go. Right, are you feeling poised? Are you ready for this World Rally Car ride yet?
I'm excited by it, and every time I think about it, I get slightly nervous, I have to say, and then I forget about it for a while, and then I'm all right, and then I get slightly nervous again. But no, I can't wait. I literally can't wait to sit in the car on Friday and just familiarise myself with where all the buttons are in one of those things again, and yeah, see what happens on Saturday.
Have you been sent the manual yet?
No, I actually took a picture of the centre console in it, so I could refer to the picture on my phone to try and remind me.
Because people, maybe people who listen to this may not realise, but genuinely, I know from a couple of people who know when we're well cars, you kind of get like almost like a ring bound folder, which tells you what all the buttons do, don't you?
Yeah, but fortunately, most of those buttons nowadays are for a co-driver, and you know, you can pre-program all the road sections and everything into it's effectively a computer that's built in. So you can put all that kind of thing into it. But these, you know, even going back to that car, and obviously we're talking a car that's over 10 years old now, but even then, those cars are quite sophisticated. And if we go back 20 years to even my Subaru, you know, starting one of those is a little bit of a mission. So you certainly don't jump in these things and turn a key and off
Big
you go.
Big question after last week's podcast. I did listen back to it, as I always do, purely for quality control more than anything. Have you tried the Mitsubishi overalls on yet?
I've tried the overalls on. They do still fit, although it's a bit strange wearing red. I haven't worn red for a long time, and I did seem very red in them, but they do fit, and
okay,
I'm wearing
okay.
them.
Well, obviously they weren't too tight because you're not singing soprano. Jack Bennion, a man of course who just seems to just shine in his new overalls, because there's a nice picture in that I spotted the other day.
He's new overalls.
They're incredibly new, aren't they?
Each time he does.
He does. Well, if you've got that level of fame, his people obviously go out and get new overalls for you, don't they, Jack?
it was a bit more straightforward than that. We were doing some work with Vital Equipment and Simpson, and also Zenith as well. And Zenith have got a new suit coming out that's made in the UK. So we were just giving that a bit of a run out. And you know, obviously my new role as a superstar, I was doing a bit of product
testing. Ryan, did you pick up on that? Right, giving it a bit of a run out. Did you like that? That's brilliant, Jack. You've got this down to a T now. You are both now quite clearly gamekeeper and poacher. You can do this interview and lark now from both sides. You clearly are a rally driver.
What can I say?
You've managed to blag more sponsorship in your one event driving career than Tony and I have in the last 20 years.
Well, if you need some lessons, lads, I'm happy to give you some. Good friends,
start
we can
some
do that.
Shops and stuff like that, but still, there you go. Anyway, listen, let's get on with what we're here for. We're here to talk about, obviously, the top of the show. We always talk about the headlines and stuff like that. And Jack, headline, Meek aims to rewrite the record books.
I was going to say, I'm not sure that headline, but you've corrected that one well. 2-3 this week. First 2 pages of the paper dedicated to Chris Meek and his attempt to score a hat-trick of WRC wins in the rallies that he's entered. Portugal and Finland, the last two he's entered, and won both of those. And the last Brit to score a WRC hat-trick was Colin McRae in 2001. So Meek could be the first person since then to get a hat-trick if he can win in Corsica. But as he says in the piece, it's going to be a difficult one for him. Didn't go very well last year. Admitted that himself, so he'll have to turn it around a lot this year. But yeah, you know, he's relatively positive, I'd say, about his chances. But also, Realistic, maybe, is a better way of putting it. Actually.
Right, there's been quite a lot said this week leading up to the event with regards to the fact that I think it's fair to say it's somewhere in the region of 50-60% new from 2015. Well, 70% of the roads being used are new, or certainly the route is new. Where does that leave us? When we look at the current crop of drivers, and obviously we know Ogier, and we had this conversation, I think it was either on last week or the week before, is what, you know, you and I both agreed that, you know, we firmly believe he's going to try and set down a marker due to the fact that this is going to be a massive level for this event. But is this where the older drivers, and what I mean is by that, more experienced drivers, perhaps the likes of Danny Sordo, and those drivers kind of come into their own, where they're going out and making new notes, and that experience comes through?
It's definitely an event that, you know, nobody's going into it knowing what's going to happen. And I think that's interesting, because we've evolved in the WRC through to events that the drivers know incredibly well. You know, they go year on year, they make pace notes, they refine pace notes, and yes, okay, sometimes the stages get reversed, like Owen Poyer and famous places like that. But to have a completely new route in a rally is exciting. But also, it's Corsica that over the last few years hasn't been a regular in the WRC. So it really is a challenge for all the competitors. And like you say, you know, maybe the more experienced drivers can really shine. I think it'll be fascinating to see, because nobody's going with pace notes that are really well refined. They're all going to be writing new ones. And I think, you know, just coming on to Chris Meek there, I think we're going to get a good gauge of just how good Chris Meek is now this weekend, because it's fair to say he's blown us away with his speed and his consistency this year. But there are events that we knew he could go well on. It's fair to say Corsica has never been Chris's favourite event. It's never been his strong point. So, you know, if he can go well this weekend, that will really just underline how far he's moved his game on. So I think it'd be fascinating to watch.
I want to say what made me think as well, and I'm going slightly left field for this, but there's an image, Jack, that you guys have used from 2006, which is Chris and JWRC and the C2 Super 1600. And I was just looking at the Junior World Rally Championship, just as I say, I'm going slightly off topic almost here, but Simeone Tempestini could actually secure the JWRC title this weekend in Corsica, and I just wonder whether that is going to be the end of the JWRC as we know it.
Yeah, you know, it's a possibility, isn't it? I was funnily enough, when we were at Rally Day, we bumped into Ryan, we were speaking to Martin Wilkinson and Glenn Patterson. Glenn obviously sat with Chris in the JWRC in the C2, and Glenn was saying what the difference of the standards were, you know, back in that day, you know, when they had the C2s, the standard was so good. And looking at it now, it just doesn't seem to be there. The depth of the quality doesn't really seem to be there in JWRC. So there definitely needs to be some sort of change involved, where, you know, we can start to encourage some of the top line drivers back through that.
I'll come to Rye, because Rye was, and I always say this flippantly, but genuinely I mean this, you were kind of like one of the king of the one make championships. Now, one make championships were always, to me, very much national kind of level, and you know, you think about you did the Peugeots, the 205s and stuff like that, and they were happening in places like France and elsewhere in the world. We didn't have them at world championship level. You know, you had your feeder service, you had the production cup, you had junior world championship, and now all of a sudden we've kind of lost one make championships, probably more so in the UK than anywhere else in the world, but they've now been kind of pushed into the World Rally Championship, and what's happening is we've got young drivers going there, and perhaps are they missing some rungs of the ladder? I don't know.
That was a long question. I'm probably I'll answer, because you've covered quite a few things there. I mean, firstly, we massively miss a strong one-make championship at national level, but without doubt. You know, it always found brilliant up-and-coming young drivers that could always shine on a level playing field. And certainly from having no manufacturer input in the UK in either a national championship or the British championship, a strong one-make championship. But I think that the second part of that, and something you've just alluded to, we didn't have a one-make championship at world championship level even 10 years ago, let alone 20 years ago. And I think that would have been something that might have helped drivers progress from national level championships up to the world championship. But like you said, now what we're getting is some drivers that are, they may be competing at national level, but then jumping straight to WRC to, you know, to aim at something like maybe the DMAC Fiestas. But I think what, the DMAC Fiesta Championship has been very competitive, and we're almost looking to that to feed the next batch of drivers. So I think, to me, the obvious solution with JWRC is to try a one-mate championship route.
You see, I'm slightly unsure, because I think Jack, I'll bring you back in now. What you've just been talking about with what Glenn was talking about with yourself, with regard to the quality, obviously we have proper kind of super 1600 teams, and proper, they were almost like satellite teams. And I guess that's what we was kind of being alluded to in the conversation, the fact that we have proper teams running super 1600 cars of different varieties, and that kind of almost added another element to it.
Maybe the different cars is what added the other element. I think we've still got some relatively big teams now. Maybe not as well known, but they are from Italy and France, and they're big teams over there. So, teams like Autosport that ran Chris Ingram and Urgent Price in the DSVs in the past. They are big teams still. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's the fact that we're not running different cars and things like that that's sort of creating a bit of a problem.
I don't know, just to come in there though, if you look at those days of JWRC, they were to a degree manufacturer supported teams, and because Super 1600 was actually quite expensive to compete at world championship level with, and if that had just been left to private drivers, it would have been very, very expensive to do. And we haven't got that many manufacturers involved at that sort of level at the minute. So I just think it needs something that supports the drivers and helps the drivers at that level. And the other confusing factor, I think, is at the minute we've got a JWRC winner, we've got a Fiesta winner, and we've got a WRC3 winner. And there's too many winners at a similar level.
You know what I think we need to do later on in this podcast? I think we need to have somebody that run a JWRC team.
That would be a good idea, wouldn't it?
You see how I managed to get that all the way around to that? Are you impressed?
That's why it's your toy shop.
I think to come in there and just add another sort of perspective on it as well. Effectively, in the JWRC, we have got a one-mate championship now. You do have to drive a DS3 R3 Max in that championship. But what differs with the DMAC trophy is that you take your money to that championship and they run the car for you. You have no input into, well, you obviously set up work you can do, but in terms of the parts and stuff that go on the car, that's nothing to do with you. You arrive and drive. So what you've effectively got is two championships doing the same thing in a different way. And looking at how those two championships run is a good way of sort of working out which one's best for moving on for the future.
I think you're right. I mean, it's important to pick up on that. It is a one-mate championship now, but I don't know what you feel, Jack, but it does just feel like, as much as everybody is in DS3s, it's just the fact they're in DS3s. It doesn't feel like it's given a high-profile manufacturer support. We don't seem to get the same publicity out of it as the DMAC championship.
No, you're right. You're definitely right there, and maybe that is a result of having different teams involved, and, we're moving on to a time now where we're not getting as much manufacturer backing further down the food chain, aren't we? So, if we know we're not going to get manufacturer backing at JWRC level, then maybe the DMAC trophy is the way to go, because that kind of forces the manufacturer involvement, because that is what they're doing, isn't it? M Sport Poland provide the cars and do all the work on them. So, that's forcing manufacturer involvement. So maybe that's a better route to go.
Let me put this to you guys before we move on from this, and I'll ask you first, right? Is the jump from an R2T, or in that case the DMAC, the Fiesta, the R2T, or the DS3 Max, is it too big a jump then to an R5 car?
No, I don't think so, because it's something we've talked about on the show before. I'm a big believer in learning to drive the wheels off something before you step up to fast machinery, and learning to drive the wheels off a small front wheel drive car is a great way to really get the most out of your driving. I think then to step up to an R5 car is a pretty good route, because in some ways you've learnt the sequential gearbox. Nowadays an R2 car is a proper little rally car, and I think it's quite a natural progression. We saw in the past people move straight from like a one-mate car at the time up to Group A machinery or wheel rally car machinery, whatever it was. And yeah, I think it's like you're saying, you know, we had Super 1600, which Super 1600 was obviously a level on from an R2 car, but then an R5 car's a level down from a WRC car. So I think the progression is still there. If you know, if the drivers are really getting the best out of an R2
car. Okay. Right, moving on. We've already kind of covered this, but one thing I didn't quite realise is Ogier looks forward, Jack, to fresh French test. Obviously, we've kind of covered it, but one thing I wanted to just kind of draw attention to, the 31-mile opener. Wow. Now, that's a proper opener stage.
Yeah, well, it's amazing when you look at the itinerary and there's, you know, there's only 10 stages on the event, so... You know, to when you think about it in that sense, you know, we're used to sort of 22 stages, aren't we? Really, that's the kind of usual sort of. It's around about 20 stages usually. So we got half the number of stages, but equally amount of mileage. So some of the runs we're going to have on some of these stages are going to be incredible. And if the weather does anything like it did last year, it also opens up that opportunity for big gaps to be created. And you know, we could get some really exciting stages. You know, much like we did last year with Kevin Abring and Elvin Evans performing so well on certain stages. So it would be really interesting to see how the route affects the rally. And I think also it's a bit of a litmus test as well for how this format works. Maybe if this format is something that is successful, then maybe the FIA look at maybe rolling it out for other events as well. So it'd be exciting to see how the event goes
right,
over the weekend.
31 mile opener. Now that's a proper stage, isn't it? That is such an epic start to any rally anywhere in the world. But what a start.
I was still trying to work out the litmus test thing.
That's where you dip paper in for changes colour. That's how you know whether it's right or wrong. There you go.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. Thanks. Great to have a challenge. We talk about WRC today and how it's changed and evolved and whatever. Great. Have a long, tough opening stage. And I think that's, again, we've talked about this rally offering something different, a challenge that hasn't maybe been there on the events that the drivers know very, very well. And a great way to kick it off. I think it'll be exciting to see what happens.
What's the longest stage you've ever done? Apart from Safari, Safari's not included in this.
so Safari been, I don't know, 110 miles or something. But Kiel, I would say, in the old days of Rally, I have a feeling we did over 30 miles in Kielder at one point on a Pirelli rally, on a national championship rally, if you like, or British championship as it was at the time. So yeah, I'm pretty sure it would be Kielder Forest. I'd have to check back online.
My first proper rally, proper BRC event, which was 2002, year after Foot and Mouth, we did a Mickey Mouse spectator stage on the Pirelli, right? And do you remember it? Which was like in a housing estate somewhere around
in Newcastle.
It was like a mile 1.1 miles around this track in the centre of this housing estate. And then my first proper stage in a proper, you know, the Volkswagen race and left-hand drive Polo, I think, was 22 miles in Kielder. That was welcome to the play with the big boys, and boy was I slow. Anyway, right, I wanted to come to this. Now, we were talking about imagery of the new breed of rally cars, Jack, in that you guys have got the image of the new C3 WRC, which was unveiled pretty much probably as we were recording last week, and I don't still know what I make of it, really, to be honest with you.
You know what? I think it's a bit of an angle thing. The picture we put to paper, I'm not so sure about the front. I'm not sure if it really appeals to me looks wise, but I've seen pictures from the side and it looked absolutely stunning. So. I'm in the same boat as you, really, Tony. I can't really make up my mind up whether it's...
I don't know whether you've just disappeared into your wardrobe, Jack, but you've gone very quiet compared to what you were before. But Ryan, you're very supportive of these new cars. We were talking about liveries and stuff last week. I'm not sure about this one at all. It kind of looks like a child's toy to me.
Yeah, but I think it looks exciting. That's the key thing. It looks exciting. I'm still not convinced on the whole rule package. You know, it's a go down the route we've gone. But anyway, that's what we've got, and I do think the cars look great.
I tell you what, I find fascinating looking at this image as well. And folks, if you listen to the podcast, and you know, have a bit of a Google search of it and see whether you can pull it up. But the downforce that obviously is running through the front splitter, which then goes down the side skirts into the back for more downforce on the back. It's just the way this thing is. I have never seen anything like it. When you think about, you know, we talk about the heady days of Group B, and I don't like to look back, but you kind of felt then it was kind of like a finger in the air. That's kind of stick something there and hope for the best. This is like NASA technology. I think I'm looking at it, and the level of science. You know, we're back on science. We had a litmus test before. We're back on science now, right? You might want to switch off. I'm not sure. But the level of science and what's gone into this just for the downforce alone, it just looks phenomenal.
Do you know what, though? I can just hear it in my ears now, and it isn't something I want to hear. You know, like end of stage one in Corsica next year, whatever it is. Oh, I've lost my front downforce. You know, I clipped a corner, and I've knocked the front bumper, and I've lost downforce now, and I'm losing a second of K or whatever because I've got no downforce. I don't want to hear that.
All right. Listen, one thing before we move on from actually, we're going to stay with Citroën, but just, are we surprised or not surprised that the car imagery doesn't have anything with Abu Dhabi on it?
Ooh, go on then, Jack.
No, not really. It's just I think it's just an initial render, isn't it? I won't be worried about any sort of logo.
It's got Total on it.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. You know, it has got Total on it. I don't know. We'll find out about that one,
there you go.
It could be an interesting point, that. Or it might just be that there's no deal done yet.
Which is fine. But that brings us very neatly on to the Abu Dhabi Total Citroën team, which, of course, doesn't just have Chris Meek this week coming up on Corsica. It also has Craig Breen. I think, you know, Craig had the disappointments of what happened on the Manx. I know he's been over in Corsica. He's done a test. He's very, very happy. Feels good with the package that he's got. Where do we see Craig in the mix? I'll come to you first, Jack. Do we think that Craig needs to get somewhere in the region of a decent result here to kind of keep going, or what, or does it really matter what he does here? I guess that's the question, isn't it?
I think he needs to keep doing what he's done all year, really, and that's he's had this aura around him all year where he's been really confident, and I think he needs to carry that through, and he needs to secure a sensible finish, and that's what he's done all year. We saw him push on in Finland and score that podium, which was incredible. But Sweden, he pushed as hard as he felt he could physically push without doing anything silly, and you know, brought a really good result home there as well. So you know, I think Corsica could throw up some things with the conditions, and you know, we might see some issues with weather and stuff like that. So I think Craig's mission this weekend is to go and prove that he can put in some quick stage times and to bring the car home in one piece.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766 787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. Now I'm going to rattle through a couple of stories here. It's Jack. Hyundai pair ready to battle over podium on Tour de Course. Of course, this is talking about Thierry Neuville and Danny Sordo. Again, we mentioned Danny before, experience and everything else, but what are your thoughts on this one, mate?
Yeah, let me get this right way around. Sordo beat Neuville in Germany, so I think that's right. So the two of them will be fighting again in the same car, and you know, they're both quick on tarmac, Neuville and Sordo, and it's definitely Sordo's sort of favourite surface, I think, isn't it? And we should see him, I think, go fairly well in Corsica, Sordo. Coming back, I think he might have been a bit rusty from his injury in Germany, which didn't really get mentioned too much, and I thought was quite harsh, to be honest, that coming back from coming back from a crash like he did in testing and to have that injury. So I thought he came back really strongly in Germany, and I'm sure he'll be looking to carry that.
Right, at what point of the season, if you're a WRC team boss, do you say to your drivers, yes, go and fight, but we want manufacturer points?
I think that's something that they really have to think about for most of the season, isn't it? Certainly when you're in a position where Ogier sort of storms off into the lead, then they can only really start looking at manufacturer points. I think ultimately the drivers want to push as hard as they can through the rally without making any mistakes anyway. And you're obviously not gonna really push hard if it's just your teammate that you're fighting against. What I mean by that is you're not going to take it, you know, right to the very edge if it's just between teammates. But I think it just depends on how the rally pans out throughout the season.
Okay,
really.
Okay, right. A couple of little stories I want to mention. Gus Greensmith. We're going to have Gus a bit later on in the podcast. He's going to be telling us about, he's got an R5 for Rally GB and also what his plans are for 2017 as well. And he's also announced he's got a new co-driver. And we'll get more from the man himself and say a bit later on in the podcast. Boys, bit of a one that maybe it's slipped off my radar as such. I don't know, but the World Motorsport Council will confirm that extra points will be available for WRC power stages. Jack, is that, have I just missed this one, or is this one just kind of been slipped in?
No, I think it's a relative new one. I don't remember seeing it anywhere either, to be honest. So yeah, it's just going to expand from a top three to a top five, and the winner of the power stage will get 5 points, and that'll descend down to 1 point for finishing fifth on the stage. So yeah, just two extra spots on the power stage, really, for points.
Do we need that?
this would be along any other business, this one, I think. We heard Capito's ideas on what he thought the power stage should be, and we've had various debates on it. It's obviously putting more and more focus on the power stage, but then taking maybe something slightly away from the 3 days of competition. I'm not convinced. I thought it was okay.
Yeah, I must admit, me too. A couple of other little bits and pieces. Garvu Gill guided his team MRF Skoda Fabia R5 to his fourth consecutive Asia Pacific Rally Championship success on last weekend's Rally Hokkaido in Japan. Do you see how I pronounced that?
Hokkaido. Yeah.
Again, now I was fortunate enough last week, I am allowed to mention this, MRF are coming to Europe, and I was fortunate enough to test some of their tyres last week at Sweet Lamb. That's why I was at Sweet Lamb, that's where I was disappearing to last week, which, you had a podcast, seemed maybe a little bit rushed, but I can only say good things about them. That's all I'll say at the moment, but I don't see me winning an Asia Pacific Championship anytime soon. Now, another story, which boys, before we push on to any other business, Martin Prokhorov returns to the World Rally Championship. I didn't see that one coming, Jack.
No, I didn't either, to be honest. He seemed quite outspoken, didn't he, when he made his thoughts known about what he thought of the penalty he received earlier in the year. So, but nice to have a privateer back. And, like I say, you know, just nice to see him back in the Championship. He's a top character.
Do you think this is a return due to the fact that the likelihood of... And again, we're back in the realms of would he be okay for a super license for the 2017 World Rally Car? We really don't know, do we? Is this perhaps the last kind of swan song of being in WRC for Martin Prokhorov before all the cars change? And perhaps he's already been quite vocal over how he felt he was treated earlier in the season.
Yeah, you would expect Prokhorov would be, he would be a candidate for a super license. I mean, there's not many people have done the mileage in the World Rally Championship that Martin Prokhorov has done in all categories. But like you said, he was quite vocal about the championship. He's gone to pastures new. I'm sure we'll see him in Dakar again, or contesting Dakar again next year. I don't know if we'll see him back full time. He's certainly done the World Championship for a long, long time now, without ever really breaking into the factory ranks. I guess at some point then it does get more difficult to get funding year in, year out. So I guess we'll just have to say watch this space.
Absolutely. Now, friend of the show, Jack, one more before we disappear into any other business. But Chris Ingram, you were speaking to at Rally Day, I guess, and he seems to have perhaps managed to get over the disappointment of what happened in Junior ERC, and he's looking at the British Rally Championship next year.
Yeah, I spoke to him at the Rally GB Media Day, actually, and up at Brennig last week, and he's really positive, actually. He's in really, really good spirits, and not at all sort of, obviously he must have been upset after the what happened in the Junior ERC, but yeah, like I said, he's in really good spirits, and has confirmed that, you know, he sees the British Rally Championship as the place to go in R5 now, which is quite telling, I think, from someone who's competed in the ERC for 2 or 3 years, and you know, he's decided that the BRC is the place to go and drive an R5. So yeah, looks quite positive for the British Championship that he wants to come and do that, and it'll be, you know, I know Chris is really popular with competitors and fans in the UK, so I'm sure they'll be very happy to have him back.
Happy days. Right, boys, before we move on to actually any other business, a couple of little bits and pieces coming up this week. It's a championship we've not really featured this year. We've been trying to get on the kind of main man, and the championship in question is the Canadian Rally Championship. We have featured it kind of sparingly in the past. We have been speaking to Anton Lesage, we're desperately trying to get on. Right, a man very talented man, but very much in the same realms of, I suppose, what David Higgins has gone through in the American Rally Championship.
Yeah, like you said, both those two championships are competition at the front, and we've talked about the American Championship with David, and David would certainly like to see consistent competition. He sometimes has Travis Pastrana, sometimes has Ken Black, and like you said, Antoine Lestage is in a similar position in Canada. Since we saw Pat Richard retire from the sport, because obviously Pat and Antoine had a big battle. It was always the Mitsubishi Subaru battle, and then Pat retired and Antoine moved to Subaru. So now it really is. To a degree, you sort of expect Antoine to win the rallies in Canada unless he has a problem. So, yeah, I'm sure he'd like to see a little bit more
frontline
competition.
I think so, but it's interesting now. Again, looking at the championship table, I feel like I set you up a little bit there. But the reason why I mentioned it that way is because there's always that assumption that he's leading the championship. And indeed, he isn't. He's actually sixth at the moment, and he's got Simon Vincent, Boris Djokovic, Simon Luzer, and Wim van der Poel, and Maxim Liberi, all in front of him at the moment. Now, it's very, very, from what I understand, it's very, very early on in the season, and it's going into the fifth round. So I think it's an 8-round championship, and it's bubbling away quite well. But the reason why I mention that is I want to get Antoine on, because for such a great deal of time, he didn't have that competition. And now all of a sudden, it's become quite intense over there. And I haven't even seen any of the TV coverage. A friend of the show and a mate of mine, Neil Cole, normally voices it. And I've not even spoken to Neil about it this year, to be honest with you. But again, I want to try and get some of these championships on, and we do miss them out from time to time anyway. But the other thing I wanted to mention, guys, before we get onto any other business, is I wanted to mention what's going on over in Ireland, and two I suppose legendary names, to the extent, you know, you've got twice British Rally champion Keith Cronin, and obviously the Fisher name, Alastair Fisher, who's been around for quite some time, going into the Irish Tarmac finale, almost the new look Irish Tarmac, which went all R5, and either one of them could actually win this championship. Jack, you've been quite close to these stories as they've been building, and obviously Keith started off doing the British Rally Championship this year, but can that, in favour of taking a full time assault, I suppose, to Alastair Fisher?
I think that's maybe why the BRC and the Irish Tarmac Championship was so sort of popular this year, is because you had that option to can one and do the other if you were doing well in either, really. So, you know, we've seen it towards the end of the year with the Moffitts and some people like that who've decided not to do the end of the BRC. Keith had some really bad luck in the circuit, didn't he? And Mid Wales, he was relatively unlucky as well. So Keith hadn't driven on gravel properly in a four-wheel drive car for a few years, had he, before Mid Wales at the start of the year. So really difficult for him to get back on the pace so quickly against some really quick guys. But yeah, like you say, it's a winner-takes-all battle on the Cork 20 rally this weekend. Alistair Fisher is leading the championship, but if Keith Cronin wins, then in his hometown of Cork, then he'll take the championship. So there's points and a half on offer. So either one wins, then they win the title. If they both slip up, then I think Sam Moffat, Josh Moffat, and Johnny Greer have still got an outside chance of
taking the championship. Well, yeah, I was going to say it's net points with two drop scores, and at the moment, Alistair Fisher's 2 points on 62 points. Keith Cronin's on 60, and Sam Moffat is on 54, and Josh Moffat is on 48. So realistically, it only takes one or two of them to have an issue, and all of a sudden the Moffats could steal a lead there. But no, I think it's going to be fascinating, and gee whiz, is going to be quick. And good luck, by the way, to one of my former co-drivers who sits with Merion Evans, young Welshman, who's going to be debuting also, I believe, in at the S3R5, and Jonathan, who used to sit with me back in the day. I'd be interested to see how those boys go as well. There you go. Anyway, chaps, we're on any other business now. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. Mine's just been made really short by you, so I can...
Sorry, mate. Go on, Jack.
No, you're all right. No, I was going to talk a bit about Cork, but instead I'll highlight everyone to a little story that you've kind of moved on to nicely there. You were talking about Jonathan Jackson, who's going to be sitting with Marion Evans. Jonathan's brother Matt drives in the BTRDA and is in the 1400 S class with a Nissan Micra this year. He's secured second in the championship before the finale. So instead of doing the finale, the track rod this weekend, which Ryan is doing, he's going to forego that, and he's going to make his four-wheel drive debut on Rally GB on the National. So good luck to Matt. He's a lovely lad, and Claire Williams is co-driver as well. They're a really nice crew and great to have around Rally, and great people to have involved. And good luck to them for Rally GB National in a four-wheel drive Super, which will be a massive step up for them, but they're really looking forward to it.
Matt was one of my mechanics the first time I did Rally GB, and he was going on even then about how much he wanted to do it. So Matt, enjoy, my friend, enjoy. And I'm sure you will. So there you go. Anyway, we'll move on to Ryan's any other business now.
Well, I've looked back into the archives this week to a time when you were young, Tony.
Bloody hell.
So I'm going to go back 35 years. So we talked about the Tour de Course being an event that hasn't featured a lot in the WRC over recent years, but of course it has a massive history in WRC. And I'm going to go back to the 1981 running of the Tour de Course, where the stage mileage was, go on, have a guess, Tony.
Stage mileage, are we competitive stage mileage?
Competitive stage mileage, yeah.
I reckon it would have been about 400 miles.
All right, Jack Bennion, what do you reckon?
That is a tough one.
Higher or lower than Tony Simpson?
I'll go higher.
For a chance for the car? Oh no. Lower. You're going lower?
I'm going higher than Tony.
709 stage miles. Wow. In 1981. And the reason I'm talking about 1981, I think he talked to us about the story when he was on Absolute Rally last year. But Terry Kirby did the 1981 Tour de Course as teammate to Tony Pond, so two British drivers at the time, both driving for the Andy Dawson prepared Datsun Rally team. And Tony Pond did his recce, and at the end of the recce, he gave his recce car back to the team, back to Andy Dawson's boys. They put a new engine and gearbox in it, and that was actually the car that Terry Kirby did the rally in. And Terry Kirby finished sixth, Tony Pond finished third. So we had two Brits in the top six back in 1981. But if you actually want the longest Tour de Course ever, that was the following year in 1982, when it was 729 stage miles. Now, just for comparison, this year it's 242.
Now, I'm from an era where people complain about repeat mileage. I've been to Corsica. There must have been some repeat stages to get that 700 miles.
Yeah, there would definitely be some repeat mileage. I would imagine it was several passes and then several passes in both directions. But nearly 730 stage miles in 1982, and it was won by a young man called Jean Ragnotti in a Renault 5 Turbo. Some cool cars, actually. Ragnotti won. Jean-Claude Androuet was second in a Ferrari 308. And Bernard Begouin in a 911 was third, beating that year's world champion, Walter Roll, who finished fourth in the school.
There you go. There you go. Wow, you see, Jack, sometimes it's just education, isn't it? It's just...
Well, yeah, it is, but I reckon I could have... They picked out quite a few of them, and I think I know one in 81 as well.
Go on, then.
I think it was Alancia Stratos, and I think it was Bernard Dornish.
Well done. Who was second?
Oh, that's a tough one.
I'll give you a clue. He was runner-up in the 1981 World Championship.
Was it Guy Freckelan?
It was Guy Freckelan, who went on to be team manager at Citroën, co-driven by...
John Todd. Oh, yeah. Look at that. I'm on fire.
That might be just some kind of... You might need to go to a doctor's about that. That could be when you pass some water or something. Boy, I feel like genuinely like I was a passenger then in all that. But nevertheless, it was very interesting.
I'll give you one other stat. I'm going to come in with one more stat. Jean-Pierre Manzagol. It's not a gentleman I've come across before, but he started the Tour de Corse 35 times. I think that's quite impressive. Fair play.
How many did he finish?
I don't know, but he had three
okay,
podiums.
Fair play. Okay. Right, I want to do my end of the business now, if that's all right with you, boys. And it's not rally, but I feel...
I'm not okay with that.
You're going to have to be, and I'll tell you why. Right.
Have you done any research?
I have done some research. I was probably one of the first people to interview this man when he first went to British Rallycross. And he's a guy called, a young man called Dan Rook, who is the 2016 MSA British Rallycross Supercar Champion. Now, I interviewed him nearly 2 years ago when he turned up with his grass track in AX and did the Super National section. And he was a very shy young man and family team just servicing out the back of a van, and he blew everybody away at Super National level, and his first year in a supercar, and he's took on and beat the likes of Julian Godfrey, who's a 5 times British Rallycross champion, and various others along the way. And he's such a nice lad, and I genuinely hope he kicks on now. And I just wanted to mention him because there's no sides to Dan at all, just very genuine, and he's worked incredibly hard to make the opportunity happen for him this year, using the Liam Doran DS3, and I hope he kicks on, and I hope he moves on and goes to Europe or goes to World Rallycross and things like that. But he was my any other business this week, purely for being one of the nicest young people I ever interviewed for the first time. There you go.
What a pace he's shown this year as well, to be fair, and you know, to come in as such a rookie and to perform as he has, then see what I did there, rookie, to do that was very impressive, and I actually approve of your any other business now, Tony, even though it wasn't rally related.
Thanks, Jack.
It was kind of rally related.
Well, you could have underlined that with, you know, you could have brought it back to rallying by saying it also saw the rallycross debut of Ocean Price last.
You didn't give me a chance to. He was in one of those weapons of buggies that you drove.
He was in an RX 150.
Which just when you're there, and obviously I spent 2 years kind of covering them and stuff like that. It's like there's like a gang of angry wasps going around the circuit. That's the best way of describing the noise.
That's a bit like what it is when you're driving one, trying to avoid a gang of angry wasps that are inside
absolutely.
The thing.
Right, boys, we've got to the end of this section. We've done all the newsy stuff and everything else. Folks, if you've got anything you want to add or anything you've picked up on that we've got factually incorrect, let's be honest, it's highly unlikely if it's Jack or Ryan, probably me. you just listen to the statos speaking before.
I did notice one before. I think you said that Keith Cronin was a double champion in BRC, and I think he's a treble champion in BRC.
Is he? Did he win it in the DS3? Yes, yeah, he did, didn't he?
Three times.
No, I'll stand corrected, because I remember him winning it in the Evo 9, and then obviously won it in the Tech Sport car, and I genuinely forgot he was in the... I think he was running by Asquith in the DS3, and he won it then, and he was backed by Mick O'Brien, and that was sponsored... took him to the Junior World Championship with said DS3, but still, there you go. All right, I was factually incorrect. You don't need to tweet in for that one, but if anything else, folks, if you have listened to, by all means, tweet us at @absolute_rally. You know where we are, and by all means, as I say, I've got some new stuff coming, which We're going to have a website and everything. It's dead exciting. Anyway, that is the end of the first section. So, folks, sit back, relax, and I guess enjoy what we've got coming up. I don't want to jinx it, because at the moment neither are confirmed. We've got Gus Greensmith coming up, but we're also hoping to have somebody else who's going to be joining us. He's going to be talking all about his days of managing a junior world championship team and looking after some young drivers that perhaps will go on to great things, and one of them being Chris Meek. So sit back, relax, enjoy, folks, and we'll be back after this break.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766-787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is Absolute Rally.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. You may have picked up in the first section that Ryan and I were talking about JWRC, team bosses, outlooks on where junior rallying went and things like that. And we thought it'd be a really, really good time to get somebody on that was really, really heavily involved back in the day. And we're delighted for the first time, and hopefully not the last time, to welcome Chris Brabeck to Absolute Rally. Hello, hi. Chris.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're really good, we're really good. Now, Ryan and I were talking about JWRC and things like that, and Rye suggested instantly that it'd be a good idea to get you on. So I'm going to hand you over to Rye, because I know he's, even though he knows you very well, he's got lots of things he wants to ask you.
Right, no problem.
We'll come back to JWRC in a couple of minutes. It's something we've been talking about on this week's show. But what we've also been talking about on this week's show is long WRC events of the past. Now you started your career, Chris, in the mid 80s when Group B was at its height. You won the Nova Cup, which led to a drive in a Nova on the RAC rally in 85. Now that was something like 550 stage miles that year. What are your memories of that rally?
Well, I think it was 650 stage miles, Ryan, actually, you know, but I seem to remember there was like sort of 78 stages or something like that. I mean, it was just at the time, I mean, it was the toughest thing I'd ever done, and, you know, or achieved in my life, really. Just unbelievably sort of tired at times on the event. And but just, you know, something I look back on now was one, you know, one of the greatest experiences of my life, really, you know, going back to sort of them days. I mean, how you would do a risk assessment and health and safety assessment of it sort of nowadays, I don't know, but it really was an adventure and a great event. And, you know, you could have sort of, you know, even sort of, we had a problem with a broken ball joint at one point on the event, and I think we dropped about 40 minutes in Dolby or something like that, and then still managed to come back and finish, you know, sort of second in class to the work Skoda. And you know, and I think in the early 30s I think we finished or something like that, 31st or second or something overall, you know. But it really was, but you know, the main memorable side of it is, you know, you mentioned about the Group B cars, you know, to sort of pull into a service area and see Henry Toivonen and, you know, just across the way in the works Lanciers and, you know, and all that type of thing. I mean, there was such a buzz and a hype about the whole thing. It was fantastic. It really was.
Now, your co-driver on that event obviously was one Joyce Champion, who's actually sat alongside me now, keeping quiet, funnily enough, which often talks about the lack of sleep that you got for 5 days. But you spent sort of the next 3 years with in Vauxhalls in Novas, and then moving on to the Astra, and then in 89 you moved on to the Peugeot and did the British Championship, but you also did the Thousand Lakes with current WRC star John Kennard alongside.
That's right, yes. I mean, that was something that, I mean, we didn't communicate over the internet to actually, you know, it was something we did by telephone while he was out in New Zealand and I was in the UK, and I'd never met the guy before. And, you know, we met in the students' accommodation in Uvascola, and I think we put in about it was definitely over 2 weeks recce for the event. And I think we'd got over every stage about sort of six or seven times or something like that. And you know, same thing, I mean, you know, it was just an extension of what we'd done on sort of with, you know, RAC rally at the time. You know, just so long and tough, but unfortunately I think we retired about halfway through on that event with some mechanical issues, but nonetheless it was just a fantastic experience. It really was.
Now obviously your team manager at that time in the the Peugeot team was legendary team manager Des Ordel. He was quite a character, wasn't he?
A real character. I mean, you know, the one of the things I remember is the stories he used to tell, you know, from, you know, from being involved in Le Mans with the Zagato bodied Aston Martins and things like that, and being quite an enthusiast with cars in general. You know, I aren't just a rally man. You know, I love the history of motorsport, and, you know, to sort of listen to his tales, which some of the younger, the other young lions, I would say at the time, you used to sort of mock him a little bit and rib him a little bit about, but I would just have sat and listened to him for hours, you know what I mean, you know, talking about such, you know, such memorable things and some of his, you know, his hardships of, you know, trying to sort of get the, you know, the, I don't know what you would call it, but the, you know, the Peugeot team to where it actually, you know, where it actually got to, and his involvement in all of that, you know, from his, you know, helping set the, you know, the French outfit up, and him not really wanting to be involved, you know, at running it, you know, from France. But no, he was a real character, you know, proper old school.
Now, you moved back to Vauxhall after that, and I guess the ultimate Vauxhall he drove was the 16-valve Astra at the time, the ex-Louis Aitken Walker car, and that was quite a piece of kit at that time.
Well, it was. I mean, I suppose it was the pinnacle of front-wheel drive at the time, you know, with the extract gearbox, because, you know, going back to my early days in the 2-litre 8-valve cars, you know, I went right through the development programme of that, and, you know, we had quite a lot of unreliability and component failures and stuff like that. So, yeah, although I have some happy memories of driving those cars, the 2-litre 16-valve car, as I say, with the extract gearbox was, you know, a really nice car to drive, really competitive. They'd just gone on to sort of new levels of front suspension and decarbonisation dampers, you know, with remote gas canisters, you know, so it was like, you know, as we know things now, that was the turn, you know, away from the good old trusty sort of Bilstein type dampers of Group 4 Escorts, if you know what I mean. So, you know, the car really was, yeah, a pretty good car, and I love driving it, and I still actually own it now, and it is partially restored, and I say that tongue-in-cheek. It sat as a bare body shell, sat in primer, but in the not-too-distant future, I do hope to sort of resurrect the car and maybe use it on some of your, you know, like the Goodwood Festival of Speed type events or something like that. And, you know, so yeah, we've still got the old girl.
Now, early 90s then, you had the odd outing in Fords, in a Sierra Cosworth, an Escort Cosworth that you finished fifth on the Manx with. You then sort of moved into team management, as it were, running the Simonite sisters with the Formula 2 cars. Was that a conscious thing to move away from driving into team management and running your own team?
Well, you know, I'd started the rally school up. We'd moved, you know, to a farm and with quite a bit of land, and I'd started the rally school up in 1990. And, you know, so, you know, as much as, you know, obviously I wanted to progress on further with my driving, you know, at that point I was married in 1990, not that was the reason I stopped driving, but you know, basically I had two kids, you know, there was, and you know, I had to sort of probably concentrate more on you know, although I was quite well sponsored at that time, and yes, we were, you could say, sort of moving forward a little bit, getting experience in four-wheel drive cars, that type of thing. But really speaking, you know, I probably had to concentrate more on the, you know, on the rally team side of things, and ensure I was making a few quid as opposed to, you know, blowing everything on doing, you know, sort of events far and wide in Europe and whatever else, and gaining experience on the driver's side. I do feel it put me in, you know, on my driving side of things, did put me in good stead, you know, as a team manager, you know, because I had a really good understanding of, you know, exactly what a driver wanted, you know, in the car. And I felt, you know, I was sort of quite good at that, you know, fine-tuning the cars and you know, that side of things. So yeah, it was a conscious decision. And I think the main thing was, you know, getting some direct work for, you know, Ford as a satellite, you know, satellite team, you know, running, you know, running one of the F2 Escorts, you know, in the British Championship initially. And, you know, and I think it was at that point I had to more or less, you know, jump on one side of the fence or the other. I couldn't sort of dovetail between the two, and I chose the team management side.
Now, you really established a good relationship with Ford, like you said, in the British Championship to begin with. And then you started running you went from the Formula 2 Escort to the Super 1600 Pumas, running them not only in the British Championship, but running them in the JWRC as well that we mentioned earlier. You had some interesting drivers in JWRC in the Pumas.
Well, both British Championship and and the Junior World Championship. First and foremost, you've probably got to say Chris Meek. We were involved with Chris for about 4 years throughout his career, his earlier career. From going as a Colin McRae scholarship driver, which is how we first started with him in the BRC, and he won the junior category of the Super 1600, in the British Championship, and then Guy Wilkes, of course, as well, who'd come through the KA Championship and Puma Championship route, and then got support from Ford, and then we ran him on both as well, which was great experience and great fun, and we had some fantastic results. And then another young guy from Norway, I always rated very, very highly, was a young lad called Martin Stenshorn, and was one of John Hoglan's prodigies, and I did rate him very highly, and it's a shame he never sort of got any further. But it was the old money job that although he was getting a bit of support out of Ford and quite a bit of sort of private sponsorship from various companies in Norway, we did one full season with him, and we probably could have had a podium finish at the end of the year. We finished third in Greece on the Acropolis Rally, which was great fun, and we were always there and thereabouts, and we had a certain Mr. Sebastian Loeb in our category that year, who we all thought was pretty good, but we didn't know just on how good he was going to turn out to be. So we had some tough opposition, and to nearly sort of end up with a podium position with Martin was pretty sort of satisfying, really, at the end of the day. But then the second year we did start the championship with him and ran out of money about halfway through, which was a shame. But then we ran Francois Duval. We won Super 1600 on the Monte Carlo Rally. We probably should have won the championship that year. But Francois, who obviously became quite a superstar driving for the factory Citroën team as well, he was offered a bit of a programme in a WRC Focus as well, and to be honest with you, he sort of lost a bit of focus on the JWRC side of things, as maybe any young driver would do, but for one reason or another we ended up with a couple of not such good results, and then the rest of the season was with all good results, but yeah, it wasn't enough to win the championship at the end of the day, which was a shame, because it would have been nice to have sort of signed the Puma off with a JWRC win, championship win, should I say, at the end of it all.
Chris, we were talking at the top of the programme with regards to JWRC. I was a big fan of the category, a big fan of Super 1600s and things like that. Do you feel that the way the sport is at the moment, certainly at World Championship level, we've kind of almost done a role reversal. I made this point at the top. We've taken the one-make championship from kind of the British Championship, and that's gone to World Championship, and now we're kind of left scrambling around the British Championship level. Do you see a career, if a young driver comes through the school now, would you have a clear kind of career path for them that you could perhaps direct them with?
I could probably come up with quite a cynical answer to that, really, but I don't see a clear path for a young driver, and I was chatting with a good friend of mine who has a very talented son only yesterday, and the funds involved to get you through sort of British Championship level and then into Junior World Championship level, it is hugely, hugely expensive, and then to then sort of even to sort of look at what a manufacturer would be looking at in terms of the experience needed before they put you in a WRC car, that's an awful lot of funding needed to take a young driver on to that level. It's very, very difficult, I think, for a young driver to sort of get to that to that end now.
How obviously times move on, and I'm not one that always uses the term, we always look back, we've always got to look forward, we've got to look forward as a sport as well. But do you feel that almost rungs of the ladders have been taken away? I don't like that term, but it's a term that you'll be familiar with, because obviously, you mentioned the KAs before. I was doing the polos back in the day, and the Ford package, which was this ladder of opportunity through the KAs, the 1400 Puma into the 1600 Puma, and then on beyond, that ladder was kind of, that was where the term I first heard it. Do you feel we've kind of almost removed the ladder now, or certainly removed, a great number of the rungs?
I think definitely. You know, I think there's a lot of the runs disappeared now. You know, I mean, because that was all direct manufacturer, you know, sort of input as well. And, you know, and it was great to sort of be able to sort of go and talk to, you know, people within Ford Motor Company, that is, and, you know, and you know, and get assistance for somebody who, you know, had come through the KA route and, you know, the Puma One Make Championship route. You know, it was, you know, and if it was justified, if they'd done, you know, well enough, you know, there was funding available. Yes, it wasn't a total funding package, but, you know, usually, you know, we're talking about a car and a spares package and, you know, some on-event support and some funding as well, you know, which, you know, for guys like Martin Stenshorn and Guy Wilkes and, you know, and Chris Meek, you know, I don't think any of those guys would have sort of got to that, you know, had it just been from, you know, from private sort of funding, if you like. So, no, I think it was essential at the time. And, you know, and it's a shame. I think a lot of manufacturers now, you know, it's all sort of global, you know, global marketing, isn't it? I think is the term or whatever. And, you know, and it's a global decision to sort of do the WRC or whatever else. But, you know, I think since, you know, going back to them days, you know, Ford Britain used to put money into, you know, young drivers and things, and as did, you know, sort of quite a few other manufacturers. And, you know, and all that seems to have, you know, not been as forthcoming. I don't know the whole sort of ins and outs of it all, of how it works now, but, you know, that seems to be, from somebody sort of looking in, of how the job has gone over, you know, in current times.
Now, I say I don't like looking back, but there's every now and again I do. And the reason why, in this instance, the original Stig is coming back to town. He's certainly coming back to town in Yorkshire anyway. He's back in those Yorkshire forests. And he's going to be driving one of your cars, Stig Blomqvist, of course.
Well, he is. And, I mean, this is something that, you know, I'm actually setting a, you know, ice driving school up in Sweden. But a little bit different to sort of what quite a lot of people have done in the past, because we've gone right up into the Arctic Circle to sort of guarantee, you know, sort of, you know, good, you know, frozen lakes to drive on, as opposed to, you know, some stuff in the sort of more Midlands that do suffer a little bit more water on lakes now and things like that. And whilst I was out there, you know, Stig's also sort of tied in with this hotel that I've asked, Hotel Jokkmokk, you know, right up, as I say, up in the Arctic Circle. And what started as just, you know, a bit of chitter-chatter, you know, over a beer, you know, as, yeah, we could do that, of course we could. And, you know, because he expressed an interest that he'd like to come back to the UK and do an event. And you know, so I replied to that, yeah, well, come over and have a go in me a Skoda at some point if you want. It's not being used much and whatever else. I only use it for, like, Goodwood Festival of Speeds and these type of events now. And, you know, so, as I say, well, something started a bit of daftness. And then, you know, the media coverage, it's, you know, maybe more naively from our side of things. You know, I mean, he's the 1984 world champion. And but, yeah, it's just been, it's sort of snowballed into something quite big, actually, and put us under a fair bit of pressure.
I was just about to say, because, you know, it's not like just lending a car to a mate or renting a car out or something. As you say, it is, you know, it's all very tongue in cheek now. Obviously, the you know, the name Stig's being used obviously elsewhere. We don't need to mention where it's being used, but, you know, I think when people scratch beneath the surface, who perhaps are not even familiar with rallying, now realise that, you know, the name Stig, that's really where it came from. And, you know, people even spoke to me about Stig Blomqvist, who've got no idea about anybody else in rallying, nobody else. So it is one of those pressure moments where, is it starting to hit home now? We're 3 days away.
No, certainly is. He's here testing the car tomorrow. And, I mean, he's just arrived in the UK today, and they've got they're meeting the mayor of York, I think, today, and, you know, various other sort of activities over in York. And you know, the mayor of Jokkmokk has come over as well. You know, so yeah, there's to say, quite a bit of pressure, you know, because, you know, my old girl, Mia Skåner, if I want to phrase it as such, it's you know, it's a proper old period car, do you know what I mean? And yeah, I mean, you know, the engine's fresh in it, and you know, the car's had sort of a good prep for sort of the event. But it isn't what I would class as, you know, sort of an absolute out and out, you know, newly built, you know, British historics type car, like the cadets I've been associated with, you know, over the last few years and that type of thing. But you know, but nonetheless, I think yeah, I'm quietly confident he'll certainly do all right in it. You know, so yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Can't wait for him to test it tomorrow and you know, and see how he gets on, see what he thinks.
Well, there's another guy dusting down his overalls who's not too far away from either of us, who's not meeting any mares at all. I just hope he doesn't have a mare. I think that's the main thing, and so does he. But there you go.
Well, I think he's I think he's here on Friday morning, actually, sort of giving the car a little bit of a shakedown or just getting himself familiarised a little bit with it. I think he's more what he needs. But I'll make a few phone calls and see if the Mayor of Broughton's kicking about.
Please do. I get some pictures. That would be brilliant. That would be brilliant. Chris,
I've got a fluffy hat and a red sort of overshawl type thing and a bit of something medallion to hang down my neck, and we'll mock someone up for you.
All right, thanks.
I love it. Chris, listen, we really do appreciate your time. Right, I think before we start ribbing you anymore, have you got anything else you want to speak to Chris about, or are you just going to keep it all now till Friday morning?
I should have had some more ammunition prepared, shouldn't I? Clearly, but as Chris said, I'm gonna have a run at the rally school just to do a little bit of a shakedown and the car. So that'd be good. Maybe Chris can give me some tuition. I think I probably need it after all the time out I've had.
Chris, can I just one thing before you go? Right, when we were trying to set this up, Ryan, and I don't care, I'm going to drop you in it. Right, Ryan said I'm going to speak to Chris in the morning because I'm going to tell him I'm testing at the end of the week. Now, I've tested in a fair few places over the years. I've even been to your place about 10 years ago, way back when. And I've never rang any venue up to tell them that I'm testing there. I've always rang up to ask. I've always yeah, rang to say, can I test, please?
Well, he probably can assume. We've been sort of, friends and associates, for many, many years, from Ryan's mum, sort of co-driving for me in the early days. And, so we're good friends. And, he can assume such things.
There you go. Well, listen, I suppose, as a team boss, because you're back to the full team boss role here, this is probably the highest profile driver you've ever had to manage.
Oh, definitely, without a doubt. And really speaking, I mean, just to sort of on that, I mean, we've pretty much now most of what we do is just restoration work, so we don't do an awful lot of sort of on event work anymore, or I just want to concentrate on the historic stuff and the rally school, and then my parts business, for the Super 1600 Puma and Fiesta parts that we do. But so this is pretty much sort of a bit of a one-off for us now, and as I say I'm absolutely sort of thrilled and really looking forward to it and can't wait, so it should be good fun.
Good man. Well, listen, enjoy your weekend, and we do really, really appreciate it. And listen, we do need to get you back on, because there's hundreds of things that I'd love to talk to you about, but unfortunately our podcast is only about an hour or so long, and I'm sure you've got other things to be doing other than chatting to us anyway. But I really do appreciate your time. Thanks again for coming on Absolute Rally, Chris.
No, it's been a pleasure. Lovely.
And we'll catch up with you again soon. And folks, we're going to go to a little break, and then we're going to come back with a young man called Gus Greensmith.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to the last section of Absolute Rally, and a friend of the show and a man that we've had on a couple of times this year, but we've not had him on for a while, and it was good to catch you up with Gus a couple of days ago, and I thought, you know what, we should get him on the podcast anyway. So welcome back, Gus Greensmith.
Thanks for having me back. Good to be back.
It is good to be back. Now, it's Wednesday. There's been a little bit of an announcement today in the press and things like that, in MN and a few other bits and pieces. So for the absolute listeners, just tell the world what Gus Greensmith's going to be up to.
We feel it's time to make to try the step up to WRC2, and so we'll be doing Wales Rally GB in WRC2 class. Feels like the right time. Feels like I've been on the limit of, or over the limit sometimes, of the R2 for a while now, and it seems like the natural progression. I feel like I'm ready for that step, or at least to try that step in Wales. So it's it feels like the best thing to do right now.
This car I believe this is an M Sport car, is it?
Yep, it will be for Wales, yes.
Okay, so I suppose you're one of these unique young men, I suppose, because you've kind of gone through the whole thing of R1, R2, okay, they didn't have an R3, they didn't have an R4, but you've kind of gone through, we've just been talking about the way back when with a guy called Chris Burbeck, who ran some of the junior teams back in the day, and we've just been talking about the ladder of opportunity, and sometimes how they're not always there, but clearly M Sport have provided this R1, R2, and now you're into the R5.
Yeah, no, it's been brilliant. It was ever since the first day I went, when I went to the BRC Media Day before I started rallying in early 2014, and I met Andrew Wheatley, and we got talking, and then obviously I wanted to be in R2 because I had a sequential box, who wouldn't? And then he said, no, stay in R1, you're not going to crash that one as fast. So yeah, so I stuck in R1 and that all went well. And then R2, 2-year plan like we'd always decided, and then yeah, it's gone well. And then obviously I'm very comfortable with the M Sport guys after working with M Sport Poland and M Sport in DMAC, Drive DMAC for the past few years. So it just made sense to do my first WRC2 rally with them.
Wow. Now, obviously, Wales Rally GB, which is just a great event. It's going to be weird. I'm not doing it this year. 3 years on the bounce, I've done it, and now we're not doing it. And I was okay until we get closer to the date, and that's when it starts to bug me. Now, obviously, you've done it. I think it's a couple of times you've done it now, isn't it, Gus?
Yeah, this will be the third time.
Yeah, and twice. You did it in the R1 car. Is that right?
No, both times R2.
Both times in the R2.
1600 and the turbo.
Right, okay. This is such a big jump, isn't it? You know, this is, you know, I don't think probably listeners, you know, even the casual and even probably the more experienced fan, just that jump from an R2 car to an R5, it is such a huge difference, you know. An R2 does feel like a proper little rally car when you drive it, I'm the first to admit it. But to get in an R5 car with all those buttons and all those switches, it's just a huge, huge difference, isn't it?
Oh, it was massive. When I was lucky enough to do a test a couple of weeks back in the R5 at Greystoke, and it was so much faster. But it was kind of weird because after the first two runs where I was sweating like a pig because my heart rate was about 180, trying to work out how something goes that fast on gravel, then it came back down. And then it actually became like quite normal, and I was obviously Christian, my mentor, was there. And he was explaining the principles are exactly the same as an R2. Don't put it sideways. Make sure the wheels are straight. And everything started to click and come back. And obviously, the thing that took the longest amount of time to get used to was the braking. Because the R2 brakes, because of the regulations, have never been that impressive, nor good. So once I got into the R5 and realized I could brake an extra 60 meters whilst going an extra 50 kilometers an hour faster, that took a little bit of while. But by the end of the day, I started nailing my braking points and everything was flowing a lot better.
So I have to ask, and I suppose everybody's now starting to clamour of what's going to happen in 2017, not in just the WRC, but elsewhere in the world with other championships and stuff. Your plans for 2017, is that purely WRC? Do you have plans to go and do other events maybe? I know you flirted with a couple of rounds of BRC this year. Would you look at doing other things, or is it just a strong focus now on WRC?
I think, I'm not sure what we'll do yet, but I think the place to be is WRC. That's where the best drivers are. It's the rounds that you need to get the experience on. What I love the idea, like you say, flirting with the BRC because it's such a great championship and the rounds are good. And I would love to be able to do some BRC next year. I really enjoyed it this year. Mid Wales is basically a shortened WRC rally running Meyerhead and Hafren. So it would make sense to do that. I don't think some other championships are the right place to be at the moment, but them two would all after this year would be my focus for next year, depending on what I'm able to do.
Good man. So what are you doing to get ready for GB? I love this. This is the bit that I love, because it's, you know, you go in there to do a job, of course you are, but at the end of the day, you're still a young man and you're still making your competitive debut in an R5. How would you prepare for that?
Well, we did the R5 test, and then my Christian and my dad said, you've got till 12 o'clock tonight to talk about it, and then you aren't allowed to talk about it until Spain's over, because you're going back in an R2T and you're remembering how to drive that properly. So not thinking about it at all is what I've been told to do, but you can't not think about an R5. So I've been watching the Wales on boards and making some slight changes in terms of speed to my notes and my braking points where I put them. So I've made some little changes in that, and then once I've completed Spain, then we will go and do a two-day test before the event and then the P2 test. So hopefully I should be able to rack up some kilometres before, which should make me feel a lot more comfortable in the car.
Good man, you just mentioned notes there. The other notable story that came out over the last week or so with regards to what's going on for you moving forward, change your co-driver.
Yeah, we changed to my new co-driver, Catherine Becker, who will complete the rest of the season with me. Christian suggested her to me, and then obviously I got speaking to her and got to know her a little bit better, and everything seemed to click. And then we did the R5 test together, and obviously the Spain pre-event test. I've just come back for the R2. And everything's working well, it's clicking well. So yeah, no, I'm looking forward to do the last two rounds. It's going to be exciting.
It is, I suppose it's another style as well, isn't it? And that's all only going to help you moving forward. Obviously, you know what your plan is for 2017, and this is a good time really to really tweak notes, and because that's one thing that's going to obviously, it's going to really, really kind of creep up on you and bite you on the bum, is your notes are going to have to be so much more sharper. And you know, I remember speaking to Scott Martin, who was talking about taking information out for Craig Breen's notes when they started moving forward, progressing from R5 to WRC. Is that something that you're conscious of, that you are going to have to start kind of almost taking stuff away in order to react to it quicker?
Yeah, the speeds are so much higher, especially in places like Finland. You just can't have the same level of information in your notes. You just can't process this all. But my notes have always been a mixture of angle, speed, and a descriptive word. So my notes, since I was working with Alex, simplified quite a lot. So my notes, when I was doing the test and I gave my usual notes, they worked well. It was like, okay, Greystoke's quite a simple venue, but even then, I never had to think about any of it. It just flowed well. So I had to look at my Wales notes and check things, and obviously a few things in that. A descriptive word might be how to drive an R2. I won't need for an R5, or I might have to add something. But generally, the notes for those rallies aren't too complicated. So that's a good thing.
Happy days. So Spain, let's get you back focused on no more R5 now. That's it. You can't speak to us anymore about an R5. I'm going to do what your dad and Christian did now. So yep. Spain, you've just come back from the test. Are we feeling good? Are we feeling, you know, where are we at? First time with a new co-driver, granted, but you've just been saying things have flowed quite well there. The test on the R2 car, was it, obviously, I've just said we're not going to speak about the R5. Was it okay, you know, taking that step back to the R2? Did it feel just comfortable again?
It felt probably more comfortable because the speed felt so much slower. I could be more precise with my driving. Which Christian noted. So I think it might have maybe helped me a little bit. Apart from the connection coming off between the gear link going into the engine, that came off, and then the dust hit me in the face. And yeah, I had a fair few nosebleeds and a sore throat since then. But apart from that, the test went really well. We got plenty of kilometres under our belt, and we found some really good setups and actually found out some new information about the tyres. So yeah, I was very pleased after that test.
Great stuff. So a couple of weeks now before you need to start thinking about leaving for Spain. But again, just watching on boards in the gym, just getting ready, I guess.
Yeah, that's the one. I'm obviously trying to. I've been working on my fitness now since we came back from Germany, stepping up everything up a little bit to help me prepare myself for next year. I've got all my targets set. So, and once I set myself a target, I rarely don't meet it. So, no, it's everything's looking good. Train a little bit harder and hopefully add a few extra bits in of practicing, working on the cars and stuff before then, and everything should work well.
Good man, good man. Listen, Gus, as the last guest on the programme this week, we always do this thing now. We do our any other businesses. Now, is there anything in rallying, nothing that it can be to do with you or not to do with you, whatever, but is there anything in rallying that you'd like to mention, anything that you've seen or whatever? If there isn't, it's fine, but we always give our last guest this opportunity now.
That's a I probably have a good story from my close call in Finland on the Duke of Jarvi stage, where we were doing it, everything was going well, and we were fast on the split, so I was enjoying life. And then we come to this this infamous, like, a right downhill, and then there's like a squarish left, like a fast square left. And I turned up to the corner, had the car set pointing at the apex, and then I turned up to the corner, I found two people on their asses after having fallen off the mini cliff on the left in the middle of the road. So I had to do my little dodge, and I actually kept the footage on my laptop just to remind myself of their faces when I turned up to that corner. And I would have loved to have seen my face as well when we turned up to that corner. But yeah, no, that was something quite unique, and I hope I don't have to do that again.
Double caution, backsides in road. There you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah,
right.
That's the one.
Gus, it's been great having you on Absolute Rally. And folks, we do appreciate the download, and you know where we are every week. We've got one more episode left in this season. And yeah, please spread the word, by the way. And if you know where we are on Facebook, it's facebook.com/Absolute Rally. Or you can tweet us on Twitter. It's Absolute_Rally. And if you want to get hold of Gus Greensmith, how do we get hold of you, Gus?
At Greensmith Gus on Twitter and Gus Greensmith on everything else.
There you go. Folks, thanks for the download. Same time, same place. We'll be back in your little download hole, so to speak, next week.